Thanks again, Alan.
Everything is burning as I watch the video. She crawls out of the ruins, venturing to go out in search of water, the final human need. Although the consequences are almost guaranteed as she goes out in the open beneath the killer drones, which aims their sights on her, then shred her to the bones, then waits for any people who might be fool enough to try come to fetch her body beneath the smoke-filled sky. 2 million people in the nine to get a wall, wait for 2-ton bombs to fall, to crush and burn the schools and tents where your whole extended family went. Scores more murdered with each passing day, with so many more on the edge of being taken away, surrounded by tanks that fire at will, and the rest of the world stands by still.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York, Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Chicago, Jakarta, Helsinki, Cape Town, Sao Paulo, Manchester, Bangalore, and somewhere in Russia, I can't actually remember the name of.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, Barrick Gold is a titan in the global mining business, a Canadian giant of a sort that doesn't brook interference in either its digging in the dirt or dirt being dug up about its political field salting. The litigious Barrick went after American reporting investigator Greg Palast and The Guardian, as he reported in the year 2001 for, quoting an Amnesty International report which alleged that 50 miners might have been buried alive in Tanzania by a company now owned by Barrick. Almost a quarter of a century later, Mining Watch Canada reports hearings commencing in the Ontario Superior Court of Justice in Toronto, quote, on behalf of 32 plaintiffs from Tanzania against Barrick Gold Corporation. The indigenous Korea people are Barrick's neighbors who claim the North Mara Gold Mines police force have committed acts of extreme violence against them, acts that include beatings, torture, and shootings that have resulted in the deaths of some of the villagers. Catherine Kumans is a research coordinator with Mining Watch Canada and contributes in bringing its report, Barrick in Toronto Court over allegations of acts of extreme violence at North Mara Mine in Tanzania, out into the open. Welcome to the program, Catherine.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my great pleasure. Of course, now, Catherine, why is the case being against Barrick being heard in the Ontario Supreme Court of Justice now?
Well, like you mentioned, the case is on behalf of 32 Indigenous Korea villagers, and these people live near the North Mara gold mine in Tanzania. And what they claim is that Barrick's security strategy for the North Mara mine is effectively converting Tanzanian police assigned to operate in and around the mine into a private and heavily armed security force. And as you mentioned, what they're saying is that this security force has led to extensive human rights abuses and acts of extreme violence, including deaths, shootings, beatings, torture of local villagers. And the case is being heard in Canada and in Toronto because Barrick indirectly owns 84% of the North Mara gold mine, and Barrick is a Canadian company headquartered in Toronto.
And this security strategy, do we know, is it something that's written down in a documented form, or is this just a shorthand for the way they go about doing business?
Yeah, so What there is in place is these things called MOUs, Memorandums of Understanding. And the Memorandums of Understanding are between the North Mara Gold Mine and the Tanzanian Police Force. But what came out in the hearings last week in Toronto was that all these Memorandums of Understanding, this is alleged anyway by the lawyers for the Kuria, it's alleged that Barrick Gold signs off has to sign off at the highest levels on these memorandums of understanding. So this strategy to use police as part of the security force is something that Barrick, as the parent company, has to approve, is what the lawyers allege.
Well, in Canada, I know that when the police are sent in to protect the interest of extractivist industries, they use the RCMP, not people from the local area, and certainly not people from the village. Is that the same in Tanzania? Are these guys coming from the city or from far on the other side of the country, the police that are enforcing Barrick's edicts here?
Yeah, very much so. These are not the local police. So if, like, when we're in, so Mining Watch has been going to this mine since 2014 yearly. And when we interview people and we ask them what happened and they tell us the story, we always ask them who shot you or who tried to shoot you. And they'll say the police. And then we always say, well, was it your regular police or was it the mine police? And they always say it was the mine police. So these police are not your regular police that are in the police stations that are also around the mine. These are particular police that are being sent in specifically to this assignment to work for the mine as part of their security forces. And in fact, quite a few of these police are what they call field force units, which is a particular branch of the Tanzanian police that mainly deals with like terrorist activities or riots or, you know, really extreme issues. So they have been sent in to deal with people at this mine.
It sounds like the CIRG, the RCMP special division that does the same thing here in British Columbia in the forestry and mining and pipeline disputes with First Nations people.
Yeah, I think there could be some similarities there. But they are the special, and they're very distinguishable because they wear these red berets and they have different uniforms. So people can always say it was field force unit or it was police. But even those, they keep getting circulated, so they don't stay. They get moved in and moved out. So people have a hard time identifying exactly who it was because they keep getting moved around.
Well, now, and this seems to be a pattern. I'm reading the report, and again, it's Barrick in Toronto court over allegations of acts of extreme violence at North Mara mine in Tanzania. And this isn't the first case being brought against Barrick in this area.
Well, this is what is so disheartening about this particular case. So, as I said, Mining Watch first went to this North Mara mine in 2014. To meet with villagers and hear what was going on. And at that time, the very first lawsuit on behalf of the same sorts of plaintiffs that are now, in court in Toronto, same issues, there was already a court case filed in 2013. So that was filed against one of the subsidiaries of the mine that was located in the UK. So it was heard in the UK. And it ran from 2013 to 2015, and it was settled out of court on behalf of those victims. And then, but the issues didn't stop. Like the shootings didn't stop, the killings didn't stop. The alleged maiming of people, etc. That all just continued. And so, in 2019, another subsidiary of the mine was sued again in court in the UK because again, this subsidiary was based in the UK, and that lawsuit covered people who had been harmed from 2014 to 2019. And that was settled just in March of this year. So the next case, first case 2013 to 2015, next case 2019 to 2024 today, this year in March. And then that was settled. And then in 2022, the case that we had the hearings last week was filed in Canada because Barrick now has taken over those subsidiaries. And it's now 84% owned by Barrick and 16% by the Tanzanian government. And Barrick has management control. And so this time the case was filed in Canada. But it's the same plaintiffs, right? It's the same issues. This has not stopped. So that's incredibly disheartening about this particular mine. And you wonder why Barrick would prefer, it seems like they would prefer to just keep settling these lawsuits as opposed to actually effectively dealing with the harm that's being done.
But then can Barrick, in its defense, say, throw up its hands and go, well, it's the sins of the father here. It wasn't us, in these prior cases, not all of them at least. And so, we're trying our best and not provoke the ire of the court by being a repeat offender.
No, so the father is actually Barrick. Barrick is the parent company. Barrick, in all cases, is the parent company. So Barrick got control of this mine from another Canadian company called Placer Dome in 2006. And from 2006 till now, Barrick hasn't always had a majority share, has always been the parent company. But as all these companies do, they create subsidiaries, right, to put distance between themselves and the actual operations for the very reason of legal, you know, trying to protect themselves legally. And so the subsidiaries that were where the cases were filed in the UK were Barrick's subsidiaries. Just so that's clear, right?
And that's clear to the court too, though. They know that they're looking at a repeat offender, a three-time loser in this case.
100%. The court is very clear, and this came out in the hearings, right? This came up in the hearings that there have been two prior cases filed, and this is now the third, and now it's against Barrick directly. But yeah, you know, I mean, I think for any of your listeners listening to this would probably think, well, wait a minute, instead of just continuously having, you know, this happen where people are being shot, and we should talk a little bit about how this is happening, you know, why this is happening on the ground, but, you know, why isn't something being done about that? I think that's the big question here.
Well, before we get to that, though, I mean, it seems like it's the cost of doing business as far as Barrick is concerned. Okay, we'll drag it through court. We pay all our lawyers. We end up with some kind of settlement down the road. And meanwhile, we're digging gold. We're processing gold. We're selling gold. We're making money the whole time. And so it's not a big deal for us. Is that too cynical of you to take of their behavior?
It's hard not to see it that way, right? It's really hard not to see it as just Barrick saying, well, this is the cost of doing business. As long as we're pulling that gold out of the ground and gold is at a huge price right now, mm-hmm. we're making money and it's hard not to see it that way, I must say.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Catherine Koomans. Catherine is a research coordinator with Mining Watch Canada. We're talking today about the situation in Toronto with Barrick in court. Their report is Barrick in Toronto court over allegations of acts of extreme violence at North Maravine, or mine rather, in Tanzania. Well, Catherine, what's the Korea problem with these mines? Are they not getting jobs at the mine? Are they not seeing a social uplift for their communities because of it?
It's quite the opposite, actually. I think what your listeners really need to understand is just how disastrous this mine has been for the local communities. So what your listeners need to understand is that the Korea people who live in this area where the mine now is, and it keeps expanding, so it keeps taking up more land, these are traditionally herders. They have cattle herds, and they traditionally roam over quite a large area. And they're agriculturalists. But in this particular area, the Korea had an extra supplement to their income, which was very near surface gold, which they had not discovered that long before the big boys moved in to start the large scale mining. But they were supplementing their income with these near surface gold deposits. And then when the mine came in, the Korea were forced off their land. And this has happened repeatedly as the mine has expanded. And as they've lost their homes and their land and their income, they've become really desperate. These are people who, when you talk to them, they'll say, we used to have it really well, but the mine has destroyed our lives. And that's not an understatement. The last evictions were in 2022, 2023. And I personally have interviewed those people, and it's devastating when people get forced off the land. This is land they've inherited from their forefathers. It means they always have a basis for a house, and they have basis for agriculture to feed themselves and to sell in the market. It's the basis of everything. It's what allows children to go to school. It's what allows multiple generations to have a place to live together. And all of that is destroyed when they're forced off their land. So what happens is that especially young men, in order to eke out a living for their families, are going back into the mine area. But where they're going is what we call the waste rock dumps. So this is waste rock. It's rock that still holds some residual gold, but not enough to be profitable for Barrick to mine. So these dumps get created, and there are mountains all over the place of these waste rock dumps. And these young men are going into these waste rock dumps to try and eke out a living from the residual gold that they can find in this waste rock. And that's when they're being shot. And, you know, it's not just the young men who are going, you know, over the walls or over the fence into these waste rock dumps. What happens is you get these clashes between the mine police, as they're called, and these young men. And there's all kinds of innocent bystanders that get shot as well, either shot by bullets or shot by tear gas canisters. Every time I go to North Mara, there's teenagers, there's, you know, school kids that have been wounded by these flying bullets. So there's like these little mini wars going on, and sometimes multiple times a week. And, you know, as one person described it to me when I was there this year, you know, he said, it's like we're living in a war zone. There's like constant bullets flying.
Well, is there any remedy being offered by Barrick as some kind of deal to share profits or to provide services, or do they do that already?
Well, there's small scale things. So there are some people employed by the mine, some in fact as watchmen of these waste rock piles, unarmed, but you know they're there. The mine is also doing what mining companies often will do, is like small, like what they call corporate social responsibility projects, like little agricultural projects and things like that. But none of this, I mean, absolutely none of this can replace what people have lost. I mean, when you've been forced off your land, you've lost the very basis for your existence. You know, when as one man said to me, you know, 2 days go by and your children have had nothing to eat and you have not been able to earn even one Tanzanian shilling, which is like 50 cents. What are you going to do? So no, nothing, you know, in short, nothing the mine is doing is making it possible for people not to take their lives in their hands. And in fact, the way people described it to me was literally that. They said, we know we're going to get a bullet. We know they're going to shoot us. And we just hope that this one time we'll be able to get some of these waste rocks with some gold in it, and we'll be able to feed our children. And then we'll have to see, you know, the next time if we get shot or not. They're very frustrated. They're very hurt by the whole situation, but they also feel really defeated by it. They don't feel like anyone is listening to them at all.
And first of all, I guess, how unified is the community, and what are they asking for of Barrick that they leave, or is there some compromise where we could? They would be happy with the situation as it is.
Yeah. So this year when we were there, and if people want to see our report from this year, they can go to, we've created a microsite called barrickontrial.ca. If you go to barrickontrial.ca, you'll see our report. And we've actually quoted people that we talked to. And one of the questions we asked was exactly that. So what can be done about this situation? And one of the things that people said, and it's so logical, it's, you just can't understand why it hasn't already happened, is they said, why can't Barrick just, you know, create an area where they will spread out that waste rock and just let us go and get this, it's waste, right? It's not anything the mine is using. And just spread that out and let us go there without having the police shoot us. And time after time, everyone I was asking had that solution. So, you know, there's a lot of unanimity in the villagers, both about how horrible the situation is. And, you know, I had widows tell me, you know, we're becoming villages of widows. And another one saying they're taking all our young men. You know, this is a desperate situation and it's been going on for decades. So, you know, even something as simple as just spreading that waste rock out and allowing people to go there would make a difference.
Well, it might make a difference too if the country where this company is registered is more serious as well about standards. And this comes up in the report. It says, quote, Canada needs to step up and pass mandatory due diligence legislation that will prevent harm before it occurs. What kind of legislation is in place now, and what kind of legislation does Mining Watch believe should be in place?
Right. So right now, the Canadian government does not have any requirements of what our Canadian mining companies must do when they operate overseas. They have some expectations, is what they call them. They expect them to respect human rights. They expect them to not destroy environments, and they expect them to follow the laws overseas. But they have no requirements. And what we're Mining Watch, together with the Canadian Network on Corporate Accountability, are really pushing for is what we call mandatory human rights and environmental due diligence legislation. And that's a big word. But what that comes down to is that we would actually legislate that Canadian mining companies operating overseas, and all other companies as well, have to report on the risk that their operations pose, not just the parent company, but also the subsidiaries, pose to human rights overseas. And then they have to file these reports every year. But the second part of that that's so important is that if someone is harmed by one of our company's operations overseas, they have direct access to our courts. So just so your listeners understand, the hearings we had last week were not about the actual case itself yet. They were procedural hearings because Barrick is trying to have the case thrown out. And they're asking to have it thrown out because they're saying, no, this case should be heard in Tanzania, not in Canada. And we all know fully well that this will never go anywhere in Tanzania because this kind of case against the Tanzanian police would never be filed. And what the lawyers were arguing is, no, this is a Canadian company. A lot of the things that are going wrong on the ground are in part due to Barrick's management of this company, and therefore Barrick should be held to account for its role, for its complicity. And yet that is not a slam dunk. That is, it's not natural or obvious that it would be heard in Canada, and it might get thrown out. We have to wait now to see what the judge comes back with. But the judge, if the judge agrees with Barrick, the case will be dismissed from Canada. And if this legislation that we're pushing for, this mandatory human rights due diligence legislation, were passed, that would stop. Anyone who was harmed by a Canadian company overseas could come to Canada and could file a case, and that case would automatically proceed. So that's really, really important.
Well, how about consequences of these court cases? Are they enough, either fiduciarily or even criminally, to make corporations like Barrick realize that the cost of doing business is too high if they're not following human rights edicts and strictures as laid down?
You know, that's the really big question that we're faced with in this particular case. I mean, this case has been so instructive because we've always thought, well, if we could only take these companies to court in Canada, then that would make the cost of doing business much higher. It would make the reputational risk much higher, and that would change behavior. And yet here we have a case where this company's already faced the courts twice and just gone ahead and settled those cases, you know. So those victims got paid, but new victims were being made all the time. Allegedly, right? So that's the question. But I do think it's different now that the case is in Canada, because now we're facing with it directly in our backyard. And so I'm hopeful, at least, that, you know, Barrick having to face this, and, you know, your show and other media are really important in this, that Canadians actually understand just how horrendous this situation is. And you know, we're hoping that that will put more pressure on the company than having settled a case in the UK.
Well, I'd like to think my show is as influential as the CBC, but if I'm a realist, I know it isn't. What about the CBC? What about the other media in this country? What kind of uptake are you receiving at Mining Watch from this case? And from all, this isn't the only thing you guys do. Of course, there's a whole slew of it. And this is a huge day for you. I'm reading Vivian's press releases, and there's a bunch of successes in this country and beyond that you're reporting just today. But what about the media uptake?
You know what? It's been disappointing. I'll be really frank with you. I was very, very, very pleased that Radio-Canada out of Quebec, so that part of the CBC, has covered this case. But you know what? I'll tell you, it was not easy. That journalist reported herself that she was denied a visa to get into Tanzania. So for her to actually go on the ground and do the interviews directly, she couldn't do it. She was denied a visa. So she couldn't get on the ground, but she has, her name is Delphine Jung, and you can see her pieces that she published, one piece Friday before the hearings and one the day before the hearing started. And then she has one on the hearings itself, and she plans to stay on this case. But, you know, the Globe and Mail put out something, but it wasn't that much. Now, there is another reporter at the Globe and Mail who's based in Africa, Jeffrey York, and he has reported on this mine quite a lot. But you know, where's the National Post? You know, where are the Toronto Star, right? Where are our big newspapers? This is a huge story. This is our biggest gold mining company in Canada. It's the second largest in the world, right? And it's an outrageous story, like with this, over a decade now of court cases on the same issues. And you know, it's now come home to Canada. I would have thought there would be more pickup.
Well, my previous guest, Alan McLeod, talked about the shrinking of newsrooms, and especially when it comes to foreign coverage and investigative journalism. But there is a trial in Toronto. Nobody needs a visa to get there. Are they showing up at the courthouse at all?
There was one journalist that I saw from the Globe and Mail who came on the last day, and he did file a report, and you can certainly read it, Niall McGee. And but it's pretty dry. Like, it just says this is what happened in court, right? It doesn't go into all the background. I mean, but like I said, Geoffrey York from the Globe and Mail, but he's based in South Africa. He has stayed on reporting on this mine over the years. But yeah, you know, the fact that there's now a court case, maybe a court case is not interesting to report on. Maybe if the judgment comes down, because right now we're waiting to see whether this case will go ahead in Canada. If the judge decides that the case will go ahead in Canada, maybe that will pick up interest. Let's hope.
Well, Canada is a hub of mining around the world, and a lot of companies that are Canadian and not Canadian use this country as their plate of convenience, their brass plate of convenience. And so it does reflect on Canada and Canadians as well when they get up to no good in their operations. So it is something that I would think Canadians would be interested in, and thus the press would be interested in keeping track of it as well, if for nothing more than to alert investors, as I think the Globe and Mail is probably most concerned about.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, we did reach out. We reached out extensively to the National Observer and to the Toronto Star and the Globe and Mail, National Post. You know, we really reached out to all the major outlets. And yeah, there has not been much pickup. But like I said, let's hope if this case can go ahead in Canada that that will change.
Well, then, can you reiterate, Catherine, in case they're listening to this program, some of those people you mentioned, how they can again get a hold of Mining Watch Canada and find out about this case and about the other great stuff you guys are doing over there?
Yeah, so because this is such a crazy situation with this one mine having, you know, serial lawsuits being filed against Barrick subsidiaries and now against Barrick on the same issues, right? That people just continuously are getting shot. We created a microsite, and it's www.barrickontrial, all one word, barrickontrial.ca. And we have all the information there of the past trials. We have our reports there, press releases, etc.
That's www.barrick, that's Barrick on trial.ca, one word, and miningwatch.ca, where you can find a lot, all of what they're doing, presumably up there. Catherine, thanks a lot for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about it today and for all the great work you guys do over there.
You're very welcome, and thank you for being interested. We really
Well,
appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, of course, and thanks go out too to Alan McLeod, and go over to Mint Press News to find Alan's terrific reporting on not only the infiltration of the media by Israeli spies, but other stories as well. Thanks again, Catherine.
Thank you. Take care.
That's all I got for this week. Till the next time.
They're carrying out the general's plan, which means kill all the kids that you possibly can. Anyone moving, soldiers take aim. Who they are doesn't matter. They're all the same. Make no distinctions, orders decree. Killing them all is just how it must be. And right now in New Jersey, you can buy shares in the resort Jared Kushner plans to build there.
Pick up your ears. Fun Drive is here. Become radio's best friend this year by donating now at cjsffundrive.ca or text donate to 778-782-2573 and be radio's best friend.